Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back on the program Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County and is here monthly when things are growing and moving along here to answer questions about lawn and garden care and whatever might be on your mind if it has to do with plants that grow in the home landscape, decorative stuff, stuff you can eat, trees, shrubs, flowers, vegetables, grass, any and all of that. Maybe you have a problem and you need some advice on how to deal with it. Maybe you're already thinking about what you're going to do next year, or maybe you're thinking about the things that you need to do at this time of year to kind of get the landscape and the garden ready to go into the winter for its dormant period. Any and all of that, houseplants too, any and all of that is certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Good morning.
So we were just talking here about, I was told Sandy that just this past weekend I had done a, put a weed and feed thing on my grass. Particularly there were a couple of areas that I had started within the last year or so. I had been started from seed. And they had a lot of weeds in there, so I thought, okay, this would probably be a good thing to do. So I put the product on there, and I tried my best to follow the directions and do what it said. I guess one of the things that I was wondering about was this: if you do something like that, and what this was is a granular product that's got a combination of fertilizer and it's got something to take care of your broadleaf weeds. And I was wondering, will I actually see? Will the weeds noticeably start to wilt, like, within the next, I don't know, week or something?
Yeah, well,
will you see something happening?
Sure, sure. You should see something with the broadleaves, because these are all post-emergent type herbicides. So they're, you know, once the weed's already emerging. And it kind of depends on the weather, on how fast you may see it, if for some reason it got really cool and dry or whatever. But I think with the temperatures that we're having, and then if we get a little rain in the next few days, I think you'll notice. And you should notice your grass greening up a little bit more, and so you should see something, because there's still plenty of time here for the grass to be doing things. I mean, this is cool season grasses. They love, you know, fall. Yeah. It's great for them.
Okay, so that's good. So it's actually, that it's hot, it's actually good, because then it means then the weeds would still be active, and they would have more tendency to take up the herbicide, because I guess they absorb it through the foliage.
And depending on the herbicide, but we don't want it too hot. So we don't want anything really above 85 degrees. And it usually says it on the label. Yeah. It says do not apply above 85 degrees, because the plant's pretty well shut down. Your herbicide isn't going to work as effectively. And I get that question. Sometimes people say, I put down this herbicide and nothing's happening. Well, you know, maybe you did it in July and it was really hot, really dry, you know, those kind of conditions. Well, the herbicide isn't taken up very well. And so it you would expect that maybe not to work as well.
So then maybe
conditions,
if you're
make a difference.
Weed control, then you really do get your maximum benefit either earlier in the springtime probably or later.
Right.
So when it's hottest and driest, it's not going to work
good.
As well.
And it's not good for the grass either, for that matter. So you really want the grass and the weeds to be actively growing. So you really want those kind of conditions.
So. Okay. So for anybody who's thinking, well, they might like to do something for their lawn, it is, in fact, now is the time to
this
be
is it.
Doing it.
Yeah, maybe an hour from now.
Let's all go out there and run down to the hardware store, rent some spreaders.
It's great. I mean, it's a great time to be doing it if you need to be thinking about seeding your lawn, if you're thinking about putting in new sod, if you've had problems with compaction, maybe you've had a lot of traffic, either people traffic or cars or whatever, and you really need to do something about compaction. It'd be a good time to be core aerifying. You can do that where you take these core plugs out. This would be a good time to think about that. Or if you have a lot of clay in the soil, a lot of thatch in the soil, the core aerifying works out really well for that.
And when does it get too late to start grass from seed?
Usually we'd like to see it through certainly mid-September is usually considered ideal. You could stretch it through the end of September because it looks like the weather's going to be halfway decent. You just don't want it. You want it to get established before we get into really, really cold weather. Well, if you could tell me when there's going to be really, really cold weather, then we'd be okay. But usually the month of September, you should be okay in our area.
Okay. We have some callers. Let's get to it. And we'll start. First caller in is in Lafayette, and that's line 4, our toll-free line. Hello.
Hello. What do you think of spreading grass seed in winter?
Well, I know that was a common practice was to do that. And really what we found is you're really better off to get it established, you know, to do it now, let the grass get established. Because the problem is the grass seed is sort of laying out there on, you know, waiting to germinate. All kinds of things can happen to it. The birds can eat it or whatever. So, you know, you're risking what's happening as it's just sort of sitting there. And so you're not really gaining much. So I suppose if you had no other way to do it, that'd be fine. But really your best bet is to do it in September or wait until April.
Okay. My main question. Under some maple, dense maple trees that didn't allow any grass, I spread some ornamental stone. And the stone has looked nice, but now in the damp summer, it's starting to show some green moss. How can I get rid of that without something, without a herbicide leaking down that would damage the tree roots underneath?
Yeah, I kind of like moss personally because at least it's green, you know. But I know a lot of people don't really care for it. That's kind of a tough thing. And usually once it starts drying out, even now, then a lot of times that stuff pretty well dries up and you can almost just sort of sweep it off because there's no roots to that moss. You could sort of do that. And I would imagine if it stays as dry as they're talking, then I'd imagine it's probably just going to dry up on its own. You could use maybe like a 10% bleach solution. But I really wouldn't soak it. That would be something, or are you just trying to clean off the tops of the rocks?
Okay, you think that would very weak.
I like a 10%, and don't drench it. Don't get it to the point where it's actually going to get into the soil.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
all right,
good luck.
Thank you. We have a couple of callers here in Savoy. And first, line number one. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question for your guest about grapes. I have a grapevine, and I've had it for a few years now, and I noticed that, like, say, for this year, for example, I got a lot of vines and a lot of leaves and everything, but I had no grapes. And I was just wondering what I can do. Is there a certain time to prune it that would help my chances or whatever?
Have you pruned it at all? Or?
Yeah, last year I was told to prune it in the spring,
right,
early spring. So I ended up pruning like in March and all the way back. I cut it all the way back. I mean, really almost to the nub, really.
To the main stem?
To the main stem.
Yeah, that could be part of your problem because the fruiting canes actually develop from the older wood that was from, say, the year or so before.
Okay.
So you have to have at least some older wood there. They produce way, way, way too much new wood.
Uh-huh.
So that's why we prune all that off normally, or a lot of that off. You may be pruning as much as 80%, but you have to allow some sort of bud there, existing bud, to get that new growth that then will produce the fruit off of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Pruning is a really hard thing to just sort of discuss without showing it.
Well, I think I get your point.
Yeah, so you may have just pruned it back a little bit too hard, and but still sounds like it's growing real well, so it's not too late. You certainly could do it in, usually we do it in February, March, early March.
But the fruit will grow on the old wood.
Well, it grows off the new canes that are coming off of old wood.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
So they're on a new cane, but you have to have that older cane for it to actually come off of.
I see. Well, thank you. That helps.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks. I think we have a grape arbor in our backyard. It's been there for a long time. The advice that I was given by the previous owners is very early in the springtime, go in there. And it sounds, and when you do it, it seems savage because
yeah,
you cut so much.
You're right.
You think, have I done so much? But he said what you should do is prune out anything that was smaller in diameter than a pencil, and the first time I did that, I was horrified the way it looked.
There's not much left.
There's not much left.
Like a skeleton.
But I guess that's really, you know, that's really what you have to do.
Yeah, because you don't want all those. That's a good point too. You don't want all those little bitty ones that don't do anything. They don't fruit. They just sort of take up space and cover up everything else, so nothing else grows as well. So doing a lot of that. And it is one of those things. If you can get a good book, actually, we have a nice one from the University of Illinois Extension on growing small fruits in the home orchard, and it talks about how to prune and all that stuff. So you may want to check something like that out at your local extension office.
Of course, in our yard, the squirrels and the birds eat them all.
So, but aren't you a good person for providing wildlife food.
Yeah, except that's not the intention.
You didn't inform them.
Well, there you go. Another Savoy person here, line number two.
I'm enjoying some grapes right now and wondering, is there a cutoff date this fall before which pruning on lilac bushes and dogwood trees should be made? These plants have been in the ground for, this is the second season.
Yeah, actually, neither one of those would I prune right now.
Neither one?
Yeah, because both of those produce their flower buds on the wood from the year before. So they're already producing their flower buds or have already produced their flower buds to the most extent.
What about around the ground where some false, or not false, but some extraneous types of,
like the suckers, they usually
call them.
Right. Yeah. And that's fine. And you're right. It's not that you can't prune them. It's just you're more likely to prune off the flower buds. But if you're like that really succulent stuff, it probably doesn't have flower buds on it anyway. So you certainly could prune that off. Now, usually with lilacs, we try to do a certain amount of renewal type pruning where we actually want some of that new stuff to come up because that will actually flower better for you.
Hmm.
So you might think a little bit on whether you want to remove that stuff or
maybe
not.
Maybe just leave it alone.
Yeah, unless you're trying to make it into a tree, which some people try to do, make it more on a single stem. But usually like some of that new stuff to come up because eventually you get rid of the old stuff and encourage the new stuff because it really does flower better.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Our guest this morning here on Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County and is here to talk about lawn and garden care. If you have questions, call us 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free 800-222-9455. Someone on a cell phone here, line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I got a flyer in the mail for a new process of non-core aeration, and they were offering special discounts and all this, and I thought, this is really bizarre because I thought part of the reason you want the cores is to uncompact the soil and allow the sort of it to spread out a bit. So I was wondering, is this just sort of a crazy thing, or is it there's some really new technique which this is touting, and I'll hang up and just listen.
I've never heard of non-coring. What do you call it? Non-coring aerifying?
Yeah, non-core aeration.
That's sort of like a non-exercise or something. You just don't get the,
so you don't know anything about it.
Yeah, it sounds really bizarre to me. I guess I shouldn't say bizarre. What it might be is, there are in the past, it was probably a little bit more common, was they actually used these tines where it was just these little, thin tines that sort of went into the ground and that was supposed to help thatch and those kinds of things. But I guess I'd wonder a little bit about what the benefit of that is. I don't know if you've ever seen those shoes. Have you ever seen those shoes in the catalogs where they have these big spines on them? You're supposed to kill the grubs and aerate your soil at the same time. And now that would be exercise. There you go. There should be an exercise program for that one. But you debate a little bit. The holes are so small. Is the grass really getting any benefit from that? And I would say probably not, or very limited benefit from that. So I think, at least as far as I know, the core aerifying, we actually take out cores, is really your best bet. And we say that the cores shouldn't be any more than 2 inches apart. So you may actually have maybe whoever maybe is doing it for you, or if you're renting the equipment, you may have to go over it twice, one in one direction, one in the other, so that you get that close proximity
and
to the cores.
And how deep?
They probably come out, 3 inches, 4 inches.
Okay.
I mean, they're fairly deep. And then the other beauty of that is, I guess if there's a beauty, I know it kind of looks ugly because it almost looks like a flock of geese have come across your yard. I don't know if you've ever seen core aerify. It kind of looks funny at first. But the advantage of that is that now you've brought soil to the surface and that will break down. So don't. Rake up those cores, even though they look funny, those will break down fairly quickly. Or you could even use something like a chain link fence behind a tractor or something that actually will break those up. And then that soil on top helps to get rid of thatch. It'll help for the compaction to some extent. And it just really is a beneficial thing in itself. So the cores themselves can be beneficial.
Okay.
So And it's probably just some people don't like the way Core Airifying looks, and maybe this particular product or whatever they're using is sort of going toward that market.
All right. To the next caller here, and that would be someone in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, this is Esther Johnson. I'm in Chicago, actually.
Oh, yes, I see. Pardon
okay.
me. Go ahead.
Hi, Esther in Chicago.
Yes, I've always appreciated your advice in the past.
Great.
I have hydrangea questions, and I've got a hydrangea paniculata. It's blooming, and it's beautiful, but the blossoms lie on the ground, and it's been in the ground about 5 years, and it's a nice size shrub. But I read somewhere that you could cut it down to the ground to get a nicer-looking shrub. Now, is that advisable or not?
No, actually, you can do that with those. Yeah.
So I shouldn't be afraid.
Yeah, don't be afraid. Yeah. Right, some of the hydrangeas actually bloom on the older wood, and so generally those are the ones that we don't want to prune down the ground, or at least you don't want to do it until after, right after the flower kind of thing.
So I can do that in the fall then? Or in the spring?
I'd probably wait till spring.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and on the Aniko hydrangea, it's a big shrub, and when I prune that in the spring, I haven't been cutting back the branches at all, and now it's a very large shrub, which is fine. Is that the correct way to prune that, to just tip it back the dead wood?
Well, the way I understood with Aniko's, they actually bloom on old wood.
Okay.
So that's one that you actually want to prune at right after it flowers.
Oh, I see. Oh, so.
Yeah, hydrangeas are a little funny because they, depending on which one you get and whether they bloom on old wood or new wood, they have some new ones now that are making it much more easy for us. Like one's called In the Summer and stuff that bloom on old wood, new wood, both. So you can't make a mistake with them, I guess. So it really kind of depends.
So is it too late now to trim that?
I would be a little leery of doing that
now. Okay, so just leave it alone.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Okay.
All right. Thank you for the call. Now, let's see. I think we'll go next to Arcola. That would be line four. Hello.
Yeah. I got a question on a walnut tree. I'd heard a while back, and I thought the guy was crazy, but he said that there's something you can do to a tree that would stop it from producing walnuts. Is that a myth, or is he just pulling my leg?
Well, I wish it was a simple thing, but there are some things that can be done. Unfortunately, it has to be done every year. Now, I'm not sure if it's labeled for walnuts or not, but there is a product that actually basically aborts the flowers. The flowers are there, and then they abort, and so they don't produce a fruit. It's fairly common on things like crab apples and apples. Sometimes the people don't appreciate the fruits on those as well. I'm not sure it's labeled on walnuts, so that'd be something we'd have to check. The problem with that is if you've got a particularly large tree, this is something that gets sprayed on them.
Yeah.
So if it's a big tree, we're talking about, either you got to have good equipment or you have to hire somebody to do it, and you'd have to do it every single year.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just hire some more squirrels.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, boy, it could be done, but it's a little expensive.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. And again, to line number two, I think, and that would be Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'd be happy to donate all my squirrels to
Maybe you'll give us your address.
Yeah, if somebody could come get my rabbits while they're at it. Yes.
Make a fair exchange.
Go ahead.
I'm calling about a Japanese maple. It's probably 3 feet high, and I transplanted it a couple of years ago. And in August, the leaves, a lot of the leaves, started curling and crinkling and turning brown.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really associated with, not enough water or too much water. It just seemed to be some kind of pathogenic situation.
Mm-hmm. Now, when did you transplant it?
A couple of years ago.
Okay, so it's been there, and then it did fine right after you transplanted. It seemed to look okay.
It did great.
Okay. Did you happen to check the stems to see if they're still alive, or that would be one thing to do, especially.
Well, it wasn't on the whole tree.
Okay.
And I'm looking at it now, actually.
Well, scrape the stem with your thumbnail.
Uh-huh.
And see if it's still green under
yes,
there.
It is.
It's still green. one of the reasons why we do that is that a lot of times late season like this, we can actually get some fungal leaf diseases, okay. And Japanese maples can get those. And I've seen it quite a bit. It seems like, and generally it's just a leaf problem.
I see.
And that's one way, if you could just check the stems, and if they're still alive, then there's every indication that it would leaf out again next year. The problem is, if this is a high profile, high traffic area, you may think about using a fungicide, and that would be, you know, something to think about. Normally, we don't worry about leaf disease problems on trees, but I know this is Japanese maples are meant to be, you know, ornamental. We want them to look good, so you may want to think about that. But it has to be done as the leaves are first expanding. You probably have to do four different sprays. So kind of have to decide.
I see a lot of powdery mildew on other plants around it, and I guess we've had a cool summer. Would that have
problem? We've actually had really good environmental conditions for a lot of leaf disease problems on a lot of things. So it may be just a matter of the environment itself, and maybe next year it won't be quite the same, and you won't see it.
Okay, and as it gets taller and gets sun a little sooner, is that likely to continue to be a problem, or likely?
Yeah, any way you can get more air circulation, get the wetness off of the leaves, the sooner the better.
Okay.
So that may help to some extent. Now, obviously, you know, they need a certain amount of moisture and stuff. The Japanese maples are just a little bit finicky when it comes to moisture. Mm. They don't want too much, but they want enough. So that would be something to watch, too, on that one.
Okay, thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you for the call. Next, we'll go to Urbana, line number 3. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a problem with my, I had a problem with my cucumbers and cantaloupe this year. The vines looked really good. Everything seemed to be going really well. And then they started to bear fruit, and the cucumbers all came up yellow and orange, and the cantaloupe vines just sort of like just started just withering away and mm-hmm. everything. And do you have any suggestions about what I should do maybe next year? Because this area of ground, I'm going to plant again on it. I'm not saying for sure what, but definitely tomatoes, and I'm mm-hmm. going to try cucumbers again. Someone did suggest for me to lime this ground and to kill whatever was in it, if that is the problem, but just if you can give me some suggestions.
Right. Now, did the cucumber vines look okay? It's just the fruit?
They did look okay, and they were, but every time,
were you leaving them on too long, maybe?
No, not really. But I did notice that also the fruit was deformed as well.
Oh.
These were supposed to be like pickling type cucumbers. And I didn't grow them because I was going to pickle, but only because I wanted them small.
Mm-hmm.
But they were round and other kind of shapes as well. But mostly, for sure, yellow and orange.
Because usually they turn that color if they're overripe.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder about just the timing of them. Because some of those pickling cucumbers are actually quite small.
Yeah, we were careful about getting things off before that.
Right. Well, as far as that goes, I'm not sure why they necessarily would be deformed unless maybe they didn't get properly pollinated or something along those lines. Sometimes that can produce some deformities in some of the vegetables that require cross-pollination like them. So I'd wonder a little bit about that, which is obviously can't do a whole lot about it unless you want to act like a bee and go out there and, you know, do your own pollinating. Boy, will the neighbors talk then.
Well, I planted it from seed and, you know, they just took off. But
Yeah. So I'd wonder a little bit. So there might be something going on with just the environmental conditions. They certainly get some disease problems. I wonder about that with the cantaloupe. Certainly can get powdery mildew. As I said, we were talking to the caller before, but it's a great opportunity this year for a lot of those fungal diseases to do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it certainly could be part of that. Maybe a bacterial wilt, which is another problem. Did you see any insects on them at all? Or On the vines? Or?
No, actually not. Mm. The only insects I had were a few Japanese beetles that liked okra and stuff like that. But and my tomatoes, too, when they came up, they were looking okay. Then suddenly the yellow and the spots on the lower leaves, you know, even though I did get a good crop of them, you know, the plant itself just seemed kind of...
Where it was yellow, and the leaves were yellow on the bottom, and then they turned brown, and
brown
then
spots, yeah.
And then it just seemed to work up the plant.
A little bit, not all the way up, but about halfway.
Yeah, because we certainly saw some leaf disease problems on tomatoes, which we often do, and it causes spots on the leaves. Usually, then the leaves turn yellow, and then they turn brown, and then they just hang on; they don't even fall off, so they look kind of funny. So, and anytime you can improve air circulation with that is going to help a lot. And actually, with all these, you know, all these guys can get fairly big, so make sure you provide plenty of space for them. That would be one thing. You may want to think about not putting the same plant in the same spot kind of thing. Do a little rotation sometimes. That can help. And you might want to even get a book and maybe start looking through it to see if it matches kind of anything that you're seeing. Because I'm afraid at this point, unless you can take it to a local extension office to have somebody take a look at it to see if maybe there's something else going on there.
Okay, so how do you feel about the Lyme issue?
Oh, the Lyme issue. Oh, no. I would, unless you know that your soil is too acidic, I wouldn't lime it. Because that, for many of our plants, they don't like that. Actually, most of our vegetables like it slightly acidic. So liming takes it the other way. So I wouldn't lime unless you get a soil test, and the soil test says you need to lime.
Okay. All right, thanks.
All right, very good. We're a little bit past the midpoint here. Our guest is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's with us monthly to talk about things that grow in the home landscape. And if you have questions, just call us. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And we'll just keep on going here. And the next caller is in Champaign, line one.
Hi. I have two questions for you. The first is the subject of powdery mildew, which I've been hearing about. We have a lot of honeysuckle along a fence, and every year they seem to get powdery mildew, I don't know, two or three times in the summer. And I'm wondering if you have any recommendations. Or the plant seems to come to life again afterwards, but it seems almost dead for a while, and then I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I have one that seems to want to do that every year, too, and it's really getting to be quite annoying. It kind of helped a little bit. I pruned it, did a lot of pruning, tried to get a little air circulation in there, and that seemed to help a little bit. Uh-huh. The problem with that is it didn't seem to last very well. So I'm almost to the point is two things. I'm either thinking about ripping mine out and getting something that isn't going to get it, and that would be one thing. Or you could use a fungicide, and that is something you have to decide because you probably have to do it every year, and you're going to have to do it probably more than once. So you kind of have to make that decision on whether you want to make that commitment to it.
I see. Okay.
So
second question is, we have some very large river birches, and one of them in particular is sort of sitting in a bed of other bushes and right next to a deck, smack next to a deck. And the river birch is showing signs of major iron deficiency. We've lost, you know, it yellowed out already in June and dropped its leaves. Now the whole north side has no leaves left. And we once had it treated when someone drilled holes into the trunk to put iron in, I guess. And now I'm just wondering, it's really a big tree. I mean, it must be 50 feet or so tall and therefore have a huge root base that probably covers our entire lawn. I'm wondering what you might recommend for treating that, and would such treatments affect what's growing around the tree already?
So what's growing around the tree? I'm sorry.
Mugo pines and junipers and hostas. And then we also have a deck, so we wouldn't be able to, if we were to put iron in the ground, we couldn't get into the ground that's under the deck. And I just wonder, is there something we can do or not?
Well, a couple things. for smaller trees, sometimes we can do something on with the soil and actually provide iron chelate is what it's called, and it's a special kind of fertilizer, I guess you'd call it fertilizer nutrient, that helps them to go ahead and green up a little bit. It sounds like a couple things. That's obviously going to be a little bit more difficult because you have the deck, and because the tree is particularly big, sometimes that makes it a little bit more difficult to apply this stuff. Probably what I would suggest, since this is such a high profile tree in your landscape, big tree, I would really get a certified arborist to come out and take a look at it. They can do some injections if they really feel like it's that far along that it needs something done that drastically. But we always, 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 always want to think twice before we stick anything into a tree, as in a nail or anything else, because you really are damaging it. You're allowing, that's a wound where insects, diseases could maybe start. So we never want to do that kind of stuff unless it's really an arborist, somebody knows what they're doing. Uh-huh. So don't be sticking nails, because I've heard that before. People just start hammering nails into the tree trying to green it up. Doesn't work. Yeah. Doesn't work. So
we've asked arborists about this, and they're all sort of think they don't know what to do about it.
Oh, really?
And they think
check with another arborist.
Okay.
Yeah, because usually that is a treatment. We certainly have lots of trees around, pin oak, sweet gums, that seem to have this regular problem of iron deficiency. If that's truly what it is. Now, if this is a river birch, now they do get leaf spot diseases too. And I've seen that before where they get leaf spot disease and actually the leaf will yellow from that and then the leaves fall off.
Uh-huh.
So it does look different. The iron deficiency, normally it's the leaf is yellow, but the veins stay green.
Uh-huh.
So it's almost pretty. If you didn't know it was a sickness, you'd almost think it was pretty with these green veins, yellow leaf.
Uh-huh.
So I'd really look at that. And if that's truly iron deficiency, then there certainly are things that can be done. The leaf spot disease is another thing. It'll be little tiny brown spots. Leaf will turn completely yellow, and then the leaves fall off early.
Uh-huh.
So I'd look for those two things.
All right.
Leaf spot would be a fungicide issue.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Matt Toon is up next, line number four. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of questions, one on yard and the other one garden. Is it risky to use that weed and feed near the garden?
Yes.
Okay, I'll take care of that. I'll just use it in the front yard then.
Yeah, you always want it because, you know, especially that those are broadleaf type herbicides. Many of those, like the 2,4-D type products, actually volatilize. They'll actually, depending on if it's particularly warm, it'll come up into the air. So I'd be very, very, very careful about using it near plants I want to keep.
Question on gardening. I've had a terrific crop in the spring, starting at late February, planting lettuce and spinach.
Mm-hmm.
But I tried to plant spinach and lettuce again several weeks ago, and the lettuce is doing just great, but I can't seem to get the spinach going in the fall for some reason or other. I plant it, and maybe a little bit comes up, and I don't know whether the birds get the stragglers or what,
but I
planted it two or three times, and I wonder if you have any suggestions.
Spinach is kind of notorious for that, so it's probably nothing necessarily that's different but what happens with other people. But are you making sure that it stays moist? That's probably the hardest thing with spinach.
Well, that's making been sure a this, problem lately.
Yeah, see, it's so dry and hot. We get these winds that, and often I think that's what's going on. The seeds just dry out too much, and then you get poor germination.
This is a garden area that I moved into just a few years ago, and I've tried to extend the size of it, and I'm getting fairly close to a maple tree, mm-hmm. and I'm run into all kinds of tiny roots.
Right,
and
right.
I've dug them up, and I was going to plant some lettuce this week, and it seems like I spent a great deal of my time on those roots, and
right.
I thought I got rid of them last spring. And
right.
Summer. Is there anything you can do about those, or you just have to live with it?
Well, you pretty much, I mean, you're creating this sort of perfect environment for the roots. You're probably watering your vegetable garden and stuff, so the roots know, hey, once they get close to that and start getting into the water and nutrients, then they're just going to keep going in that direction. There are some root barrier kinds of things that could be done, maybe, if you really think that's something that's going to be a perpetual problem for you.
Well, I could go in a different direction, I suppose.
Yeah, you may just find, I would just probably let the maple tree do what it wants to do and maybe go in a different direction, because I think you're going to find it, you're going to end up fighting that every year.
I experienced a similar problem as an earlier caller on cucumbers and zucchini.
Oh, really?
I got one or two out of it, and then the vines just seem to die out. And on the zucchini, I get maybe one per plant, and then they would fade out. I didn't know whether it tried to powder them a little bit. The only thing I can think of, and it was suggested by someone, that maybe I'm not getting enough sun. It is in the shady area near that maple tree.
Usually if plants aren't getting enough sun, you'll just see sort of stunted growth. They just don't grow as well, or they don't produce as many flowers and fruits. But usually they sort of hang in there unless it's like really, really, really shady. So I imagine there's something else going on there too.
I plant them in hills from seed, and the plants look great to start out with. Could it be a lack of water in the middle of the summer?
Possibly, but the zucchini also get a squash vine borer, and it's actually an insect that's inside the vine itself, and that can be a particular problem, and it seems to be really spotty. I've had some people say they never have a problem with squash vine borer, and then I've had other people that say they get
it
every year.
Put on it.
Yeah, it's a little difficult because either you have to use an insecticide on a regular basis as they first start to vine. Some people go ahead and put those floating row covers on them until they start to produce fruit. So there may be a few things that way. You may want to, probably the big thing is that at the end of the year, make sure you get all that stuff out of there. Get the vines out of there however you dispose of things, bury it, something. But you need to make sure those vines are out of there.
Could the powder slow down pollination?
Well, depending on what pesticide you're using, oh yes, because 7, for one, is very toxic to bees. So you have to be very careful when you're using 7 pesticide, and more than likely I would encourage people to use other things besides 7 because it really does kill off the bees, which is your pollinators.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll go to Muhammad for the next caller here. Line 2. Hello? Maybe they changed their mind. In any case, they can call back. In fact, anybody who wants to call in here. We have about 15 minutes left. Sandy Mason is with us. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. That's our monthly lawn and garden care show. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455.
You know, this really is a good time to be thinking about doing. This is kind of like our last time. You know, we have the spring, this flurry of activity. September is a flurry of activity. Great time to be thinking about. It's time to divide your peonies. This is the only time we recommend that you divide and move peonies. So if you need to have that done, this is a great time to do that. And also dividing other perennials and stuff. So this is a good time to be thinking about that.
Well, I have a question about, I have a perennial plant in my yard. It's called beard tongue. Mm-hmm. You know the beard tongue?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice plant. It was one of these things that flowered pretty early in the summer. And then it didn't flower, but it's a nice-looking plant. So after it flowered on the stem where the flowers were, it has what clearly are seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, can I take those and stick them in the ground and grow more beard tongue from there? Or is it harder than that?
I would think you probably, or just letting them fall where they may, I would imagine you'll get seedlings off of that. We see that with a lot of the perennials, and I would imagine even with that one, too.
Mm.
So I would either, you can take them off and sort of inoculate an area where you think you want these, or...
Well, I was thought that I might actually try that
and
see what had happened, because I'm not sure, you know, the plant... I'm not sure if they would fall off by themselves. I guess eventually would, but I don't know if it would be better to leave them on the plant and then later do that, or just right now go ahead and take them off and punch them into the ground.
If they're truly brown, if this, you know, you want them to ripen on the plant.
Once they ripen,
the flower heads ripen, then I'd say go for it. Either you can collect the seeds and put them where you want, or just sort of, you know, use it as a little fairy wand and you can go around and just inoculate.
Yeah.
Or maybe not.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll try it, and I'll let you know how that works out. We have some other callers now. Byron is next, Illinois, line number 2. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a very large hackberry tree in my yard that lost a limb, a rather significant portion of it, a couple of years ago, and the termites have infested the tree. And I'm wondering, is there any way I can save that tree?
Mm-hmm. Does a tree look okay other than having this big...
It actually, since the termites have infested it, it looks better than it did.
I've never heard of that, but maybe there's sort of... They like having guests.
It looks fine.
Yeah, because more than likely what the termites are actually feeding on is actually that dead stuff on, you know, because the majority on a really big tree, a lot of it is actually that dead heartwood stuff. So I have a feeling that's probably what they're actually feeding on. They're not actually feeding on the important part of the tree that's, you know, that the layer that actually where the nutrients and water and stuff transport. So I imagine that's what's going on. So I wouldn't necessarily give up on the trees because it's got termites. Just for your house's benefit and your garage's benefit, I'd be treating for the termites.
Yeah, that was my thought.
Yeah, and I would go ahead and do that. It's probably, and I'd be more concerned about my house than probably than the tree.
All right, great.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Back to Muhammad, I think, for another caller. Line one. Hello.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Is line one?
Yes.
Yes. What I'd like to know is I built a house in the woods about, 10 years ago, and I've got a lot of shade out here, and I've got some moss. And I wonder if there's any way to promote that.
Well, actually, you can. Now, here I thought you were going to tell me you wanted to
get rid of it,
because I usually talk to more people that want to get rid of it. I like moss.
I was in Japan about 3 years
ago. I love the way it looks.
I saw a lot of really beautiful moss, and I thought it would really be nice to be able to do that.
Well, supposedly, now I've never done supposedly if you take a yogurt and you actually take some of the moss and you mix it together and then use that, I'm not sure you necessarily have to do the yogurt stuff, but it may help. There may be a certain amount of things that they can live off that way. But actually you can sort of inoculate areas just by taking the moss itself and if you grind it up or whatever and then put it on areas. And then just keep it moist. That's probably the other big thing. They really need a certain amount of moisture. So you can, and I've actually transplanted some. It's very easy to transplant.
Is there a herbicide I could use on that would not kill that?
And pardon?
Would it take out other things that are growing in it? Is there a herbicide I could put on it to keep out other?
Oh, as other things come in?
Right.
Is that what you're saying? Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, I'd be a little bit concerned that it's going to affect the moths on any of the herbs. I'm not sure any of them are labeled to even tell you whether they're going to bother the moths or not. So that would be something that I'm not sure I could tell you one way or the other on that one.
I was told that putting sulfur on there would change the pH in the favor of the moss, and that would...
No, you know, I've heard that too, but the problem is, I mean, grasses and stuff will grow at higher pHs. They may not like it, but they'll certainly grow at higher pHs. So not necessarily that you can sort of favor one over the other. I think I would get rid of whatever's there, you know, wherever you're wanting the moss, I'd get rid of whatever's there, either dig it up or whatever, and before you actually put the moss on it.
Okay, and I can spread it with yogurt, you say?
Yeah, I've heard that before, where you just actually put it in a blender. You put yogurt and the moss in a blender, and you make up this slurry-like stuff and then put it out. I hopefully you don't have any dogs, because I think there might be some issues there. But.
Mm. Well, I don't have... We have a lot of wildlife. I've got a dog, but it wouldn't be out there. So. Okay, well, thank you.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Could be the beginning of a whole new... health food fad, moss
yogurt.
It's so green.
Good eating.
Let's go to Flossmore, line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
We have geraniums in pots. We've never had any trouble, but it was very damp, and we've got this fungus on them. So I called the extension service, mm-hmm. and they told me what to use. And it's a powder, you know, that we pump on.
Mm-hmm.
Well... You know, it doesn't really work very well. So we cut them all down to, you know, just a little short thing. And we did one first. Now we've done the others. And it comes up and it looks beautiful, just wonderful, but it's got the fungus on it again.
So when you say fungus, what does it look like? It's on the leaf or it's on...
Yeah, it's on the leaves and they're little holes. First they look a little brown, then they make holes through. And what I'm wondering about is we keep these over the winter. We have a south window, and we keep them over the winter. And I have a feeling this is just in there now, and we can't do anything about it.
Yeah, that's why I was asking what it looked like, because we do have some diseases within geraniums that are actually systemic. It's actually, it's already in the plant, and there really isn't a whole lot you can do about it.
It seemed to be because of the, you know, all the rain we had.
Right, right. But they do get...
She identified it for me. And
pardon?
Well, you know, she described it to me and sent me this information.
Mm-hmm.
So on, but
the stem looks fine itself.
The stem is fine. It's the leaves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It might also. I don't know. When are you applying the fungicide, or when were you? multiplying.
Well, whenever my husband, I can push him into doing it.
Okay. Yeah, the problem with a lot of the fungicides is the fact that they're not necessarily curative, they're protectants.
Uh-huh.
And so it has to be done on a fairly regular basis because you're just protecting the leaf against infection.
Yeah.
So that might have been part of the problem, too, is just the timing. The fact that you're getting it again seems a little bit odd. But certainly conditions could be right where it's just happening again.
Well, I just wonder, should we just get rid of them and forget about keeping them over the winter?
I'd be a little bit concerned because, as I said, there certainly are some diseases on geraniums that will keep from year to year, and there isn't a whole lot you can do about it.
No, we never
so I'll
had
leave that
it
up
before,
to you.
But yeah. So if I knew the exact name, I could find out from you whether that would be one like that?
Right. Probably would need that or really need to find out. Unfortunately, the plant clinic closes tomorrow.
Oh, that doesn't help.
Yeah, unless you want to run down to the plant clinic real quick.
No, not from Flossmore.
Yeah, that would be tough. Or again, sort of take it to the extension office, see if maybe they can take some pictures.
But there isn't any way that I can, put something in it and get it well, really.
Again, depends on what the fungus or what the pathogen is. Some of them are systemic, and they're in the plant, and there isn't a whole lot you can do about it. Some of them are strictly leaf problems. And
I think it's a leaf problem.
Yeah. Which the fungicide usually will help for that if they're applied at the proper time.
Oh, and it's the proper I wonder fungicide. If you can just get rid of them because and clean out the pots or something like that because I'm afraid, it'll just never go away.
Right.
So it may be that's the case.
There's certainly a possibility.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, good luck.
And we'll go to line number 3. This is our next person here, and they're in Champaign. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have a crabapple tree in our front yard, and about 2 years ago, half of the tree all of a sudden died. And so I have left this half of the tree left, and one half is doing really well. Is there anything I can do about it just trying to kind of stimulate that the other half to grow back?
Well, depending on what the structure is, it's probably not going to grow back. I mean, you're probably always going to have a lopsided tree.
Uh-oh. So would a main branch split at some certain point as the tree gets bigger?
Would it split?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? Depending on the branch angles, yes. I mean, there's certainly a possibility because if sometimes depending on what crabapple is, most of the time they're pretty tough when it comes to that. But sometimes if they have really, really narrow crotch angles, you know, where the stems come together, sometimes and you get a weight of leaves and crabapples or whatever, and sometimes those can break apart, certainly, and then cause a problem. But unfortunately, when you lose half a tree, you really kind of have to decide, is this tree ever going to be a nice-looking tree? And is this really one I want to hang on to? Or would I be better off actually getting a different one and something that looks a little bit nicer? Now, how old a tree is this?
Oh, 5 years.
Yeah. It's still fairly young. You might be able to look at it and see if there's some way that you can, there's another branch coming out that might make it look a little bit better, but unless there's some branch that's coming out into that area, that void, it's going to look a little funny.
Okay, well, the good thing is the dead part is facing our neighbor and the good part is facing us.
There you go. There you go. It was sort of self-pruning. It took care of itself.
So, okay. Well, thank you for your time.
Right, very good. We have maybe 2-3 minutes left. Somebody wants to call real quick, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Anything else that in terms of general maintenance at this time of the year? You talked about the fact, for example, if you're going to divide peonies, this is the time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then maybe that there are some other perennials that if you want to divide them now is the...
For most of the other perennials, this would be the time as well. Usually irises, we probably say more in July and August, but the big bearded irises. But pretty much everything else could be done in September. And you want to do it now. You don't want to wait till October or whatever. If you're planning on putting out mums, I'd do it now. I wouldn't wait till October. Mm-hmm. And really, because you want them to get established before the cold weather. That's one of the big things.
How about if people are already starting to think about bulbs? Can you be planting bulbs now? Tulips and stuff like that?
It might be a little bit early. There's some concern, but I wouldn't be too hesitant even that last week or so of September. So we're probably getting to a point now where you could go ahead and at least plan for your bulbs and where you're going to plant them.
Okay. We got a couple cell phone calls. We're trying to get at least one. Line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I'm on the road, and I'm enjoying your show. Quick question for you. I've always liked Osage orange trees. What can you tell me about those? Can I get them to propagate from the seeds, and how would I go about it? And is there any use for the oranges?
Yeah, the orange itself. The only thing I've ever seen is for throwing it at each other. That's always a good. They're really good for that. I've played soccer with them. They're pretty good at playing soccer. Okay. Other than that, the squirrels eat them. Other than that, I'm not sure you're going to find a whole lot of happiness with Osage orange. You certainly could get males that don't have, if you can find them. I just don't know. You know, they're not high on the list of ornamental trees, so sometimes that makes it a little bit harder to get them. But I would think native, any place that specializes in native plants or those kind of things might have Osage orange. But it's a tough tree. I mean, if you really were, again, it did a great job when it was used along fence rows. I mean, it did exactly what it was supposed to do. It was a tough tree, and the wood never rots, and can't beat that. I've never tried it from the seed, as far as... I've never tried it.
Question.
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't happen.
If I were to try it, what would I do? Simply bury it in the ground?
Yep, I'd just bury it.
How deep?
I would... Not very deep. I would just put it, like, right underneath the surface. And if you want to give me a call at the Extension office, I'd be glad to look it up for you, because we have books that would tell us about propagation on those, or check with a library or something that has seed propagation on trees, because the info is out there, so...
Okay.
Thank you. Well, there we will have to leave it. I'm sorry we have one more caller we can't take, but next month, Sandy will be back. We'll do it again. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, you can look in the phone book and find the extension person near you and get some advice from them. And then also there's that show, Illinois Gardener, Thursday night, 7 o'clock on WILL-TV. Another chance to ask questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.